And we are talking the Bank of Canada conspiracy with constitutional lawyer Rocco Galati, a case before the courts here in Canada. Very important, and you're not going to hear about it on the mainstream media, by and large. We'll find out why in a few moments. Just a reminder that coming up in hours 3 and 4, we'll talk with John Rappaport of No More Fake News about the Zika virus hoax. Join Coast to Coast AM George Norrie for a dynamic discussion on paranormal phenomena, conspiracies, and all things unexplained. It's called Beyond Belief TV. Check out this phenomenal TV show, Beyond Belief TV, with George Norrie. To subscribe, go to beyondbelief.com. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, take your questions and comments about the Bank of Canada conspiracy and what it means to you. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast Toronto affiliate Talk Radio, AM 640. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. Rocco Galati is a Canadian constitutional lawyer, and the case before the federal courts up here north of the 49th is a conspiracy case. He is alleging that various finance ministers, prime ministers, etc., are conspiring against the people of Canada. They are ignoring a piece of legislation that has been on the books since the 1930s. It's called the Bank of Canada Act. It allows governments of Canada, federal, provincial, municipal, to borrow at interest-free money from the Bank of Canada to pay for things like infrastructure. We also funded universal health care, the St. Lawrence Seaway, which was a huge undertaking, all at interest-free. What kind of response are you getting from, and I ask this, I guess, sort of rhetorically, what kind of interest are you getting from the mainstream media up here in Canada, the Globe and Mail, the National Post, etc., with regards to this case, Rocco?
Well, it's funny because for years there was an absolute blackout. And last year, as a result, ironically, of a publication called the Epoc Times, the Epoc Times is a newspaper that's loosely affiliated with the Falun Gong. They ran a first page story, and it prints simultaneously in about 60 cities around the world. As a result of that, the Toronto Star did a piece, and then soon after that, Amanda Lang on CBC did about a 20-minute interview on primetime television on CBC on this case. She'd indicated that, she'd been wanting to do the story for a bit, but so that's the only mainstream press it's gotten. The Globe and Mail has had the material for a long time. All the other Canadian news outlets inquired about it, but none of them have done a story. So that's where it stands. Of course, Amanda Lang is no longer with the CBC. I'm not saying it has anything to do with her having done the story, but she was the only one who did an in-depth interview on it.
And how are they approaching this case? Are they giving it the due respect that it deserves, or are they just sort of dismissing it as?
I've been told by journalists with whom I've had a long-standing, relationship as a lawyer for years, because they've covered a lot of my other cases, that I've been told by two of them that they were told to stay away from the story.
You were told by members of the mainstream press here in Canada, they were told stay away from this story.
That's correct, yeah.
And did they explain why they were told that?
No, no explanation is needed. They didn't offer an explanation, but I guess what the explanation is. The powers that be don't want this story out and known, because then people may actually demand that we take control of our own fiscal policies again through the mechanisms we have,
So give us the numbers again, Rocco, for here in Canada, taxpayers here in Canada, because we can't borrow, because our federal government refuses to borrow from the Bank of Canada at interest-free to pay for infrastructure on behalf of all Canadians and other things, and we are accruing this huge debt via compound interest. How much is it costing Canadian taxpayers a year?
Well, last year, for instance, the interest payment on the debt on a $230 billion budget was, I think, $27 billion. It's been as high as $40 billion, when the interest rates were higher. So these are huge amounts. Just to give you an idea, it exceeds the military budget every year.
It exceeds the military budget. How about health, the health healthcare budget?
It exceeds the health budget of several provinces. Just think about that for a second, that you're paying more to your bankers in interest than you are to protect your country. That's
All right,
mind-boggling.
are you ready to take some calls, Rocco?
Sure. Oh, before I do, Richard, I wanted to also convey something interesting. We have a parliamentary library in Ottawa, to serve the MPs and the senators and the cabinet ministers. And last year, somebody dropped in the mail, sent me anonymously, I don't know who sent it to me, a paper research on our case that was requested, obviously, either by a parliamentarian, a cabinet minister, somebody in the House of Commons. And the questions asked of the researchers was, are the assertions in our statement of claim true? And all the answers came back yes, essentially. The only minor variance was they claimed, oh, it's not true, you can't get money completely interest-free, but you can get it at, about prime, which right now is half of 1%, which to me is almost interest-free. So that's the only disagreement they had. So, the researchers at the library in Parliament have confirmed our assertions is accurate and true, including, what most people now know today is the banks, private banks, create money out of thin air.
All right, to the wild card line we go. Gordon is in Florida. Gordon, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Richard. Rocco, I'd like to get both of your thoughts on two very similar scenarios in the United States. Now, one of them is very well known. The Federal Reserve is, I believe, a private organization, and I think it may violate the Constitution insofar as the Congress is supposed to regulate money. The second one seems unrelated, but back in the 50s and 60s, we had the best higher education in the world, and then they forced college students to become addicted to college loans and then remove the bankruptcy protections, and the students were defenseless against predatory lending. Think the Second Amendment, that's the economic Second Amendment, and the college tuition soared, and you had a monopoly among the colleges anyhow. And I have a case in federal court. I'm intervening in the Tetzliff case. If it would be all right, I'll tell you where you can find out about my intervention in that case, if that would be all right. It's a case involving a bankruptcy discharge for college loans, and those are both financial matters. Before I get your thoughts, can I share where that can be found on the internet?
Sure.
Okay, I'm Gordon Wayne Watts, and I'm in Lakeland, Florida, between Orlando and Tampa. And if you Google Gordon Wayne Watts, think Flash Gordon, I'm GordonWatts.com and I'm GordonWayneWatts.com. And they're on different servers in case one goes down. One's on GoDaddy and one's on HostGator. I'm not promoting those places, but those are the ones I have. I've had other ones. And it's front page news. And the people that are participating in this have dropped it. One of the gay marriage lawyers is taking this case, and he's famous, and I opposed him in court on another issue. But now we're on the same side, and they've dropped it, and I'm intervening, which your lawyer will understand that I have a legal right to intervene when this case affects me, especially if my interests are not being represented. So those are two kind of disparate financial issues in the United States, but they both sound very similar to your matter, where the government is forcing something down our throat that's unconstitutional. They changed the terms of the credit card, the college loan terms, which is illegal, and the bankruptcy law in America is supposed to be uniform under Article 1, Section 4, Clause 8 of the U.S. Constitution, and it's not. The college students are not treated the same as the credit card users or as rich people who can file bankruptcy. The college students can almost not. So that and the Federal Reserve issue. But again, to find out about mine, go to GordonWayneWatts.com or GordonWatts.com. I'm in Lakeland between Orlando and Tampa, and it's front page news. And
all right, Gordon.
Your visits.
All right, appreciate it. Rocco, I don't know if you have any further comment on that.
Well, three things to say. First of all, I'm not an expert on U.S. constitutional law, so I'm not going to make any comments But the student loan thing is very interesting because, as part and parcel of this chokehold that citizens are under, yeah, that is a very recent phenomenon. In Canada as well, they now, you can't make a bankruptcy application until 10 years after your last day in school from a student loan. There are three things that enslave North Americans right now: the student loan, the car loan, and the house loan. Those are the three things that keep North Americans enslaved till almost retirement, if they can ever get retire. And we're not in control of any of those things that affect us. For instance, I was originally born in Italy. In Italy, if you get into university, it's free. There is no tuition. And now the European countries are going through that battle. University education is free in Europe, essentially. You pay a registration fee. Once you get in, you're accepted. Nobody's paying the horrendous amounts to get educated, which is a basic right, if you ask me.
Rocco, do we know when the last time either municipal, provincial, or federal government went to the Bank of Canada to take a loan to pay for an infrastructure project or whatever?
I can't recall, but it was the last time that it was 1974, just before we joined the Bank of International Settlement.
And if let's say municipal government, let's say where I'm sitting here in Toronto, because they have here in Toronto, we have a huge infrastructure a deficit, roads crumbling, bridges crumbling, the Gardiner Expressway crumbling. If they went to the Bank of Canada and asked for a loan, interest-free, under the Bank of Canada Act, what would be the response?
Well, just I have to clarify, municipal governments, they did change the law because the provinces balked, because municipalities are a creature of the provinces. So the province would have to request it directly for the municipality, or the municipality would have to ask the federal government under their spending power to ask it for the municipality. So the municipalities no longer can directly ask. The long and short of it, Richard, is, and that's another reason why they made it that the municipalities can't get directly asked, is there's more direct democracy of municipal councils. So now it'd have to be the provincial or federal governments who have to ask. And the long and short of it is, they don't. They don't ask.
All right. Wildcard line, Wayne is in Illinois. Wayne, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning. Good morning to the CTC family. Richard, I want to really thank you for this guest that you have on tonight. It is so very important. I was just reading briefly about the town of Dunham, Quebec, and they stopped Imperial Oil, Suncor, Shell, stopped them from building a pipeline through their town. That Canadian tar oil sands crude is 20% worse for the environment than American crude oil. It's 20% more greenhouse gas emissions. So I want to say to the Canadian people that you've got to come together now. This new prime minister, he's saying it's a conspiracy. Somebody's got to sit him down and tell him it's for real. It's not a conspiracy. It's a lot of things happening in Canada, the same as the United States. Your roads, your bridges, your infrastructure is crumbling. As far as the United States is concerned, the Federal Reserve is at the root of our problems economically, because it is 12 privately owned banks dictating economic policy for this country. And, you know, you got to stop the Canadian business leaders, the politicians who control the media. That's why the story's not getting out in the first place. So I want to say to the Canadian people, pull together so the business people, the politicians, the corporations don't destroy your country, because that's what they want to do. All they care about is the bottom line. Any comments?
All right, Wayne, thank you for the call. Rocco, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, thank you. The interesting thing, you know, we've been made to believe that the use of the word conspiracy is something dirty or insane. All a conspiracy is an agreement between two or more people to effect the same aim, and they act in accordance to effect that objective or aim. You know, if people think that the resources of the world are are extracted, refined, manufactured, distributed, and financed through telepathy. Well, they're the conspiracy theorists. We've been taught to stay away from the use of the word by the people engaging in conspiracy.
You would know full well.
Conspiracies are criminal offenses. That's why they have them in criminal law, because they happen.
That's right. It's a legal term.
It's a legal term. You can have and you could be liable in civil action for conspiracy if two or more people get together to try to adversely affect your business. It's a conspiracy, and it's actionable. So, I mean, it shouldn't be such a dirty word. I'm not suggesting the caller is using it as such, but when he said, you know, this is not a conspiracy, it's reality. Well, a lot of conspiracies are reality.
In your case in the federal courts here in Canada, this a conspiracy case against the Bank of Canada or concerning the Bank of Canada, do you name names? Do you name the former ministers of finance, etc.?
No, I just name generically the Minister of Finance because that's the way it's pleaded, and Her Majesty the Queen, which is a symbolic sort of pleading. You don't name the persons individually in the federal court. If it were in the Ontario Superior Court, I would. That's just a matter of pleading and procedure.
But
name the Minister of Finance as an institution. Yes.
So is it possible that the standing Minister of Finance would be called to testify in this case?
Well, if the courts allow it to proceed to evidence and trial, yes, I would subpoena the Minister of Finance.
What would be your first question to the Minister of Finance?
Well, I'd like to know why they have a standard letter for every Minister of Finance that just doesn't change at all in the wording. Who's in charge of the Ministry of Finance? I mean, over the years, people have requested, municipalities have sent requests to the Minister of Finance, and they get the same standard letter by different Ministers of Finance.
What do you mean? And what does that standard letter say to the municipalities?
Well, thank you for your letter, blah, blah. We've considered this option, but we've been told that the banking community would not be essentially content with this, and furthermore, put on inflationary pressures. Same BS. Now, on the first one, the fact that the banking community doesn't like it, I say, so what? What do I care? Well, why should anybody care about what any private interest says with respect to government policy in favor of the people of the country? And the thing about the inflationary pressures is just complete BS. It's the same letter. So the bureaucracy sends the same letter, which tells me, obviously, the Minister of Finance doesn't see it. And if they do, they don't deal with it. It's the same packed answer we get, whether it's a conservative or liberal Minister of Finance.
Going back to 1974, you mentioned that the current Prime Minister's father, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, was under some pressure by his finance minister at the time to stop using the Bank of Canada as a lending institution and to go to the international bankers. How was the Prime Minister convinced?
Well, essentially everybody was convinced on the same BS that, you know, to consolidate all the central banks of the major economies would in fact lead to stability in the banking industry and the financing of, you know, the world, as it were. Now, that's how it was sold. Well, the irony of all of that, of course, is that it only fed into the IMF and World Bank loans vis-a-vis the Third World.
And as you mentioned, the Prime Minister, the late Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, lived to regret that decision. We'll come back and take more of your calls. Rocco Galati, Canadian constitutional lawyer, the Bank of Canada conspiracy, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. And that's the Allman Brothers Band and Soul Shine. My weekly radio program, The Conspiracy Show, can be heard Sunday nights here in Toronto on Zoomer Radio on AM 740 and 96.7 FM and on about 40 affiliates in the United States. You can listen to the live stream at zoomerradio.ca. Or download my free app, The Conspiracy Show, at iTunes or Google Play, and the website again, strangeplanet.ca. Coming up in the last 2 hours of the program, John Rappaport from No More Fake News discussing the Zika virus hoax. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up and around them will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. I believe the banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. The issuing power should be taken from the banks and restored to the people to whom it properly belongs. That is a quote from Thomas Jefferson. Back with more of my conversation with Canadian constitutional lawyer Rocco Galati as we discuss the Bank of Canada conspiracy right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast's Toronto affiliate talk radio AM 640. Rocco Galati is a Canadian constitution lawyer. A bit of a Don Quixote, perhaps, tilting at windmills? Well, you'll tell me. This is really a David versus Goliath case, Rocco. You are up against the elites, not even the 1%. We are talking about the 1% of the 1%, the international bankers. Do you think you can win?
Well, first of all, I don't tilt at windmills, although I'm quite familiar with Cervantes. I was a literature student and linguistic student before I went into law. I win most of my cases. Whether I can win or not is never something I try to predict. The real issue is, for me, is it winnable? Is it well-grounded in law? And the answer to that is yes. It is so well-grounded that that's why there was a media blackout on this. It's monumental in terms of citizens and their rights to take control over their banking system. And, you played that quote, or you read that quote from Thomas Jefferson. He understood this. A lot of people understood this before World War II. We've had a snow job since then, and America's grandchildren are already on the streets and homeless.
All right, Jan is in Brooklyn on the wild card line. Jan, welcome to Coast. Your question, comment for Rocco Galati.
Hi, this is really horrific. What you just said. Look, since we know that the bad guys are trying to take over, I believe that Trudeau does know about the conspiracy because it was actually his father that did it. And I just think he's really afraid that they might try to kill him. And I think whoever votes in your favor might be really afraid that they would try to kill them. Even Barack Obama made the statement that presidents get killed. The whole thing is just very, very sad.
All right, Jan, thank you for the call. Is it that dire, Rocco, that once you're elected, you get read essentially the Riot Act and you're told this is the way it is, don't rock the boat?
I don't know what they're told. I've never been elected to federal or provincial politics. But certainly historically, that threat is always there. I mean, if you look at how many U.S. presidents have been there, I think the stat is that one in four has been shot at, and one in ten has been shot dead. I don't know, but I don't know to what level at those positions, like whether the Prime Minister of Canada is afraid for his own safety on an issue like this. I think it goes through different levels mostly. It's what he's told. He doesn't know. They're not educated at this level. And then he relies on various people for advice. And those are the very same people who are profiting from this scheme.
All right. East of the Rockies, Pat is in Minneapolis. Pat, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
I want to inspire you two brave superheroes to jump in my time machine and make two stops. I've read and heard several times about President Kennedy working on these very things, including the U.S. printing its own money instead of the Federal Reserve. And if I go backwards one more time to Hitler, I know that many people were in cahoots with him before the reality really set in. And it included the Bushes, big bankers in America, Ford, Lindbergh in my state. Many great people were cavorting with Hitler, but it was really Franklin Roosevelt and Churchill that realized the truth and stood up to him. But I think the banks, I think that the History Channel has revealed some interesting things about how the Reich escaped Germany and left Europe after World War II. And I'm wondering if he thinks that as we chop at these tentacles generation after generation, and of course we have to keep up with this work, do you think that people like Arianna Huffington, teaching people how to change their banking, us little people, that Bernie Sanders, Senator Warren, and others, Susie Orman, can help us to just keep working on chopping away at these tentacles like you are doing?
All right, Pat, thank you for that. Rocco, she mentioned, you know, the Nazis, and it's interesting, the Bank of International Settlements, is there not a Nazi connection? Was that not formed after the Second World War by the remnants of the Third Reich?
That was formed to oversee the reconstruction under the Marshall Plan. The other thing about these issues that people should be aware, it's not just one or two stops. You know, the Medici family made their money financing wars for France and England. These banks, these bankers go back hundreds of years, the same money. JFK also put in an order not allowing the Federal Reserve to take any more Vatican Bank deposits. He was afraid of the influence the Vatican Bank was starting to have on American banking. So it's you know, I don't know. I'm not, as a lawyer, I'm not in a position to try to unscramble the omelet. The point is, there is an omelet, and people are denying there's an omelet. And so what we need to do, the caller's quite right, is you take control of your own finances. The more you feed the banking system, the more it oppresses you.
All right, first-time caller Abe is in Washington State. Abe, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, thank you very much, Mr. Saris, for your guest this evening. And Mr. Galati, I deeply appreciate the time that you've taken out of your busy schedule to come on the show and to discuss these very, very important issues with the nation. Thank you so much, both of you. Out of many, many questions I could ask, I just have a few, and I'll get right to them. I've heard China's manipulating its currency. If this is so, how does that relate to the massive borrowing that I've heard that America is doing from China? That's the first question. Second question, could the United States actually create its own Bank of America, like you're striving to reinstate the Bank of Canada and have interest-free loans given to its citizens? What would it take for the United States to have a bank like that, like you're trying to do in Canada? And what do you think, Mr. Galati, is the prognosis for the U.S. economy with its current economic policy, its current economic borrowing policy? And why do you think, if you've had any time at all to spend a little bit of time looking at the U.S. presidential election, what do you think of any of the candidates' current discussion about U.S. economic policy as it relates to your suit and your issue with Canada, either from Mr. Cruz, who I guess was a Canadian citizen, and Mr. Trump, or any of the other candidates, Mr. Sanders? And I deeply appreciate the time that you've given me to ask these questions and for your discussion of this issue this evening. Thank you so very much, both of you.
All right, Abe. Well, you're a constitutional lawyer, not an economist, Rocco, so I don't know if you want to weigh in on any of those.
No, I can weigh in. Listen, every country manipulates their currency. China is doing so by simply, up to now anyway, they've let loose a little bit by not free-floating its currency. If you think the Canadian currency has not been manipulated when it drops 30 cents in like 3.5 months, there's a lot of manipulation. And when that manipulation happens, for instance, in third world countries, people literally starve. Second of all, there's nothing to stop the United States of America through Congress in enacting a bill to establish a public, publicly owned bank that serves the same purposes that the Bank of Canada also served. And I'm sorry, Richard, I forgot the last question.
I guess it was about the current, the economic prognosis for the United States going forward.
The only candidate that I've seen from what little I do follow of the nomination races is Ron Paul. I think all the other candidates are completely lost on this issue or not on board.
All right. Well, Ron Paul, of course, ran the last presidential election, and since retired, his son, Rand Paul, suspended his candidacy. Let's say hello to Jesse on the international line, calling from Vancouver, Canada. Jesse, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you, Richard. Before I ask my questions, I can answer two of Abe's questions. The Bank of America situation. Obama lost his opportunity. Now it will never happen. You cannot have a Bank of America, which is a matter of privatizing Fed, and have that motion go through the bickering Congress that you have. It will never happen, but Obama had a golden opportunity because Feds were essentially bankrupt, and the public would not have opposed him at that time, except he brought the same Wall Street people as his advisors. He was not an economist. He was not a banker. He is also a constitutional lawyer. He does not understand economics, and he lost the golden opportunity. As far as the U.S. prognosis is concerned, well, as long as most of the other countries in the world accept U.S. dollar as a reserve currency, and it's mostly because the commodities are traded in dollars, once they lose that leverage, the dollar is finished. Nobody would want it because the world is awash with dollars, and they need those dollars to maintain their sovereign wealth funds, because right now it's the most credible currency because the Europeans are ruining their own currency. But the BRIC countries are trying to find their way out by forming another alternate bank, which they have just started, and it's just a matter of time. Till then, U.S. dollar is doing fine, and basically the U.S. economy is being supported by the rest of the countries. Now my questions. Rocco, I have one question. I have three or four, but I don't know. I'll run out of time. You said that between 37 and 74, the Canadian government was borrowing money at no interest rate. Now, I know that during the Second World War, at least half of the war expenses were funded by victory bonds. Why would you say that they were borrowing all the money at no interest? Because war bonds paid interest to the public that was buying them. It happened in United Kingdom. It happened in U.S. So it's not entirely true that the money was borrowed at no cost. What's your answer to my first question?
Well, the bonds are only one of the ways that the Bank of Canada raises money. It also simply prints it. The Bank of Canada is the only institution that is allowed to print currency.
Currency is a very small part. If you have taken any course in macroeconomics and microeconomics, by looking at M1, M2, and M3 figures, you will know that currency is a very small, minute portion of the money supply. It may be even just 1%. It's basically...
It is now. It wasn't historically. Second of all, those bonds would have been 10 times more expensive on the private market.
But they were being sold and bought. If the money was available for free to the government, why would you need the bond? There is a reason for that. Actually, I know the answer,
but
it will take too long.
Go ahead.
No, it's not. To me, other questions are more important, and the time is very limited. The Bank of International Settlements, I apologize. I agree with your sentiment, and I am looking at the Comer, I don't know how to pronounce it, website, and I will communicate with them. But the Bank of International Settlements fundamentally doesn't have to do anything with the problem that you are describing for the following reason. Just the way the central bank in Canada is needed to oversee the retail banks in terms of maintaining the standards, maintaining the reserve ratios, and maintaining interbank transactions at the retail level, at the consumer level. Same way we needed an international bank to arbitrate the transactions between various countries and different currencies, and to make sure that the banks are behaving in a reasonable manner when they are interacting with each other. And to that extent, it has nothing to do with Canadian bank, Canadian government's ability to be able to borrow money at no interest or low interest.
All right, Jesse, let me get to Rocco to respond here.
Well, that's just total nonsense. That's the mantra. But the requirement that no bank can lend money to governments at low or no interest rate came from that body. Second of all, they feed into the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. In fact, under the Bank of Canada Act, when we joined, we amended the Act to open accounts, reciprocal accounts, both at the Bank of Canada and those funds. And that's the mantra, but it's bogus. You know, they don't do anything to regulate banking. That's why we've had two banking meltdowns in the last 12 years. They don't care.
Rocco, give listeners, not only Canadian listeners, but all of our listeners, an assignment. What do you want them to do after hearing this program?
Well, they should go and educate themselves on the history of banking and who actually runs their banking system in their country. And a lot of Americans are under the delusion that the Federal Reserve is a government bank. It's not, for instance. In Canada, a lot of people don't know that the bank exists and why it exists and what it's done historically. And just research the fact that there is no control over private banks now. Basically, they literally print money out of thin air, which historically was done by the central bank. They create money. They were never able to create money until the last 20 years, where this everything's run amok. And that's why you had the subprime fiasco down in the States, and that's why the banking system is collapsing before our eyes, because it's run amok.
And very quickly, what's next in this court battle? You're at the federal court level. What's next? Very quickly.
We're going to the Federal Court of Appeal. Yeah.
Are you confident?
Well, as confident as I can be. As I said, I think the case is on good grounds. If it gets shut down, it's not for any lack of merit.
This could be monumental. Rocco Galati, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
All right, when we come back, the Zika virus, is it a hoax? John Rappaport from No More Fake News will give you his take when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this.